The recording that you're about to listen to is a talk from the City Bible Forum. We would appreciate you respecting our copyright by not making copies of this talk or altering the content in any way. We hope that you find the material beneficial. If you would like more information on the City Bible Forum, you can visit us on the web at citybibleforum.org.
I think I'm on. Yep. Welcome everyone to the City Bible Forum. Just wanted a position to seat that I don't have to stare at that light. Al, why don't you take a seat? I'm not going to bite, mate. If you're here for the first time at the City Bible Forum, we don't normally sit here on little stools. The normal format is that one of our speakers, either our steward or Ian Al, will be at the lectern, addressing a certain topic from the Bible. But every now and then, and this is our fourth go at this, we thought it would be good to step back and discuss the topic. We actually had a different topic in mind for this month, but we thought that it's impossible to avoid this issue of natural disasters, given what everyone, no doubt, has been seeing on the TV. So we brought this topic forward, or introduced this topic. The other topic that we will look at, that we're going to do, the human condition, we're going to do later this year. So the format is going to be rather straightforward. In fact, it much depends on you guys, how lively we want this session to become. We've got a little bit of an introduction that we're going to go through just to set the scene of natural disasters, where is God through all this. But then really it's over to you to ask whatever questions or comments you wish to make, and Al will do his best to respond, and I'll correct him when he gets it wrong. So that's the sort of process we have in mind. And we'll be all done by 10 to the hour. So that's the plan. So perhaps the first question, Al, have you ever been in a natural disaster?
No, I don't think I have. Nothing that would qualify as a natural disaster. So I've driven through a few bushfires and that kind of thing, and then seen bushfires lick around the edges of the house when we lived out in Engadine. So worried about that to the point of maybe leaving the house and that kind of thing. But that's as a boy a few years ago.
So you live in a pretty safe part of the world now?
Oh, well, the eastern suburbs has got to be the safest place in the world, hasn't it? I just worked it out the other day. We're too far back from the coast to worry about a tsunami, and there's no river to flood, and there's no bush to burn. And I was just thinking about that as a 200 ton jumbo jet just skimmed over the roof every 5 minutes. So I'm thinking, what could possibly go wrong as the aeroplanes just come in over the house? Yeah. So pretty safe. Although, you might remember in 99, there was a hailstorm that went through even the eastern suburbs and demolished so many houses. A friend of mine was sitting in his dining room, was under the dining room table with his wife and kids as they huddled there, as hailstones the size of softballs went through the tiles and were bouncing off the top of the table. So even in the eastern suburbs, it can happen.
Okay. Well, as I mentioned in the beginning, we've all been exposed, haven't we, to the natural disasters that have been lately in our area, in firstly the floods in Queensland, the earthquake in Christchurch, and more recently in Japan. So Al, maybe first up, a comment on just the way we experience these days, these phenomenon on the TV.
I think previous generations didn't have to cope with this same anxiety about natural disasters the way that we have the anxiety now, and that is the media brings everything from the world into our lounge room or onto our computer screen. But it's also a function that's worth thinking. The closer something is, the bigger it is, the further away it is, the smaller it is. So last year, the floods in Pakistan in the kind of around the middle of the year, there were something like 20 million people affected. Massive. And yet the floods in Brisbane seemed much bigger. I'm not belittling the Brisbane floods. I'm just saying, in terms of the scale, there's an order of magnitude of difference. But because it's Brisbane, and because Channel 7 and 9 are 24 hours showing it, it feels much bigger because it's closer.
They're unavoidable now because of the TV and internet.
Yep.
How do you see that you think we respond to what we see?
I guess two things. One is I see that people get compassion fatigue, I think is the latest kind of trendy term. And that is you get your heart ripped out and you're exhausted over watching what's happened in Haiti. And then the very next thing is, Cyclone Yasi arrives, and then there's Christchurch, and Christchurch is still going on, and Japan has happened, and it's kind of like it just doesn't finish. Was it last week or earlier this week? There's tornadoes in the USA, have killed 300 people, and then was there an earthquake yesterday?
A tornado,
and so it goes on. You kind of feel like, what's happening? And the next thing is, what should I do? So we gave some money to Pakistan, we gave some money to Brisbane, but I kind of like, we're going to do it every day.
And then the old one sort of drops off the news cycle. The next thing is
the 8-second attention span. And that is, you think, okay, well, we've got Cyclone Yasi, yep, okay, that's happened, and then we've got Christchurch, that's happened, and then Japan, that's happened, and then and then the royal wedding, that's next, and then straight after the royal wedding, what I meant was in the news cycle, depends how you look at it, the royal wedding is the next thing, and then the thing after that is Osama bin Laden, and then kind of. It just got to stop back and think, oh, wait a minute, the guys in Japan are still in a bit of a mess, just because they're off the front page doesn't mean it stopped. And so we end up, the news cycle pushes us to, you've got to resist the attention span of a goldfish. That's the boy you've got to resist.
Yeah. Okay. And other reflections on, I guess, does it rattle us at all, you think, or shake us in terms of our...
Here's what I'd suggest. Modern city dwellers, we take it for granted that we have nature under control. So that now Cyclone Yasi hits North Queensland, and the only way that I notice it is that bananas go to $12 a kilo.
About to eight.
Okay. So, we don't, and I'm not, most of us are not worried about where the next meal's coming from. Water, we have huge drought through from about 2000 to 2008 or 9. How does it affect me? Well, I can't hose my car. And that's about it. And we just take that for granted. It's hot, we put on the air conditioner. It's cold, we put on the heater. We just kind of get, in terms of geography, you jump on a plane or you Skype somebody. We've got it all under control. And then one of these things happens, the flood or the fire or the tsunami or whatever it is, and I think it rattles people that life isn't as secure as we'd like to think, and it's not just an individual death, it's a rattling of the whole kind of social fabric for where we are, and that's why it's so traumatic for people.
Yeah. Yesterday we had the advantage of having this discussion with David Cohen from the University of New South Wales, a scientist. And some of the questions that came up were, are we experiencing more of these natural disasters? Should we be even more scared or sort of rattled?
Mm-hmm.
I think he said that, it's, on average, you should expect 1-9 earthquake in your lifetime, and yet we've had 3. So maybe there is cause to be a little bit anxious.
Maybe. Although, from what he said, I don't think he thought that the frequency of these things was any more. It just seems to be there's more people in the world, and it's reported much more immediately and much more constantly now.
Yeah. Okay, well, we've titled this series Natural Disasters, Where is God Through All This? So this is the question we can't avoid. This is why we put this series on. Is it a fair statement to say that these disasters do challenge a belief in a personal God?
I think these disasters are meant to rattle or shake our views about God, yes. And in fact, they should, because we ought to work out whether actually we've got a view, the Bible's view of God as God reveals himself, or are we kind of, have we got a God that we've made up ourselves? So I think it's worth being rattled about that. And I suspect too, even if I could say respectfully, for the atheist who looks at this, I think it gives the logical response to their worldview a shake as well.
Yeah. So therefore, it's legitimate for us to be having some questions. What does this mean about God's control? Other questions like that.
Sure. The Bible writers ask questions about this, and people ask Jesus questions about it as well.
Okay, good. Well, maybe that's the cue for you to ask some questions too. Call one straight away. Thank you.
Questions
for the sake of the audio.
Go, that's fine.
So, how do we understand and how do we give an adequate response to the questions of natural disasters, particularly when children suffer?
And that is one of the particular questions that the Bible writers wrestle with as well. One of perhaps the great question. If God is good and God is powerful, why is it that innocent suffer? And they do. And I think what the Bible tells us is this, that there are no easy answers to that, and you may not get answers until the judgment day. And that's why the Bible writers tell us to weep with those who weep. When people have lost loved ones or children or so on, there are no easy answers and cliches. So weep with those who weep. The whole of the book of Job, 42 chapters in the middle of the Old Testament, is about a man who is effectively innocent, suffering and not understanding why. And what are you left with? You're left with the character of God, that God is good, and we're asked to actually hold on to that, that there is some reason and purpose in that. How do we know that? We've actually been shown that in Jesus, and I'll say more about that later if you like, that God stepping into our world in the person of Jesus demonstrates his goodness and his care and his commitment to us. But the flip side of it is this, if you pull the plug on God because of the suffering of the innocent, we've pulled the plug on hope. There is no hope and no purpose and no meaning. And my question for those who do that is this, why is it that we can't live that out? We actually can't live out the logical consequences of pulling the plug on God. So, no cliches, no glibness, but you say, God offers hope, but we do not understand the reasons for all of these things happening. Yes, good point. I think that what you see good and evil highlight one another, and great good and great evil, the dark and the shade. Although, if you go right back to Genesis, I think that God is able to tell the man and the woman good and evil, and they are able to choose without having experienced it. That's my point, without having experienced it. So that good is seen as obeying God and trusting him and walking that way, and evil will come from, evil will be refusing to do that. So I don't think that's I may have got lost in the point that you were making. So I think we go right back though, it's evil is not a necessary thing. I think that's what I'm saying. But I think what the Bible does say is that God is able, God is so big, so powerful, God is able to bring good even out of evil. Certainly. Amos chapter 4, if you want to dig around in that God says to Israel, look, I sent you all these hard things, and it still hasn't opened your ears. It's a great irony that the good gifts of God, like there's no city more blessed than Sydney in terms of things from God. The good things from God actually seem to block our ears to listening to him. And C.S. Lewis called the full quote is, God, and I can do this, God whispers to us in our pleasures, speaks to us in our conscience, and shouts to us in our pain. It's his megaphone to a deaf world. And so we naturally assume that we deserve all the good things we get from God. And when something bad happens, it's like, oh, where did that come from? We didn't deserve that. Whereas the way that we treat God is kind of means it's almost the reverse, that we deserve his anger, and he gives us good things out of his overwhelming generosity.
So,
now, that's kind of it's got a sharp edge on it, but yeah.
So we may not actually really want to bring that on ourselves, but you're saying there's a bit of a silver lining, perhaps.
I didn't understand what that...
Well, there's a silver lining in that we might be learning through suffering, even though we're not really wanting to wish it upon ourselves in the first place.
Yes, true. You will suffer in this world.
That's another question.
Bob down the phone.
Bob Chipper. To summarise perhaps quickly the comment for the CD. So it's difficult to get our head around why God would seek to perhaps be punishing those people in Japan in order to teach them a lesson or in order to... Yeah, so how do you respond to that?
I agree. It seems too much that we wouldn't do it. That it seems too much that God would send these things to a world when there's just kind of ordinary, happy people trying to get on with things. And I would say that is why I actually need to take the Bible seriously. That the Bible says that the way that we respond to our Creator, the one who gives us life itself, that we ignore him, that we treat him with contempt, and the way that we live, that it really, really matters. To the point where God would do this, we live on a planet that's actually under, the Bible says, the wrath of God. God is genuinely, truly angry with the way that we treat him and the way we treat each other. The Bible talks about us living in a world that's been put under frustration. The idea of a world that's groaning as well. And I would say the pain, the suffering in our world is not dished out according to, at the moment, strict cause and effect. And so it does appear that innocent people suffer. And Japan suffers and southeastern Australia doesn't. And so I can't say why this place and why not that place. All right.
So therefore are you saying there's no direct correlation, connection between a particular disaster and that being the judgment?
You cannot say that because one city suffers and another city doesn't, that this city was particularly more evil than the other. It's interesting, the way that Jesus uses natural disasters is very different to the way that Jesus responds to questions about it is different to how we might expect. So in Luke chapter 13, they come and say to him, what about these people that the big tower fell on and killed? There were a dozen or so people killed when a whole lot of a tower or scaffolding collapsed. And Jesus' answer is to say, don't think that they are any worse than anyone else. But if you don't turn back to God, you will perish too. Now, it's a difficult in your face answer, isn't it? Unless it's true.
So it's a general warning, is it?
I think he's saying, learn from these terrible things that have happened and realise the fragility of your own life, and so turn back to God and find peace with him. And it's got a sharp edge on it. Well... what about those, so if you like, what about those who haven't heard about Jesus? What about those who've never had a Bible? First problem is this, the Bible's a very practical book, and that is it addresses the reader. And so you won't find pages in the Bible written to those who've never read the Bible. It's just like in the Sydney Morning Herald, you won't find a page for people who don't buy the Herald. Okay, it addresses the reader. But there are some things you can understand from it. So, for example, what the Bible does tell us is this, that God will judge people according to their consciences. And so we have a conscience that tells us right and wrong. Now, it needs to be educated, it needs to learn more and so on, but people know right from wrong. And the Bible also tells us what I've found, and that is no one lives up to even their own conscience. So for years I've been saying to groups of people, if you're the person that lives up to your own moral standards, if you do that, if you live up to your own moral standards all the time, please come and tell me that, and then I'll stop saying this to audiences. And no one ever has. Because we just don't live up to even our own moral standards, let alone God's. Right? Bible tells us, Romans chapter 1, that we know that God is there. We know that his divine power and eternal majesty, that God is there from creation. But what we end up doing is lowering our eyes and living our lives for other things. But also, the more information we have, the easier and better it is, or the easier it is to respond properly. And so for those who do have information about Jesus and the offer of forgiveness, it's much easier and much clearer to respond properly. That's the point, I think. So we have that great privilege.
So maybe, again, just to, if I may quickly summarise it, we can move on. That's two things. One, we've referred to another incident, similar perhaps to the tower falling down. Mm-hmm. And secondly, well, how can we be more proactive? How can we be part of the solution rather than not complaining?
The Apostle Paul calls those who follow Jesus, he says to them, in the book of Galatians, chapter 6, verse 10, at the end, if you want to look it up, Galatians 6, 10, he says, as we have opportunity, let us do good to everyone, all right? Especially the brotherhood of believers. And so that's the point. As you have opportunity, you ought to be busy doing good wherever you can. I think the difficulty comes now that the problems of the world are pumped into my lounge room and onto my computer screen, and with my pathetic little financial resources, what should I be doing and who should I be helping and how? I could probably do a lot more than I do, and I should. But it's just kind of that, it's as you have opportunity, it's who you are with, where, it's that, it's just the opportunity now has gone global, or that feeling anyway.
But it's also, I mean, if we look at close to home, say with the floods in Queensland, a lot of people not just gave money, but actually gave up time and working these and helping people rebuild homes.
Yeah.
So I suppose it does say something about how God does bring good out of evil.
Yeah, although I always find it, to be honest, I find it personally unconvincing that there's some massive disaster and one person out of 1,000 gets rescued kind of miraculously and then that's the good that's come out of it. I just want to call it a disaster and not understand it. What the disasters do show, though, is the best and the worst of human nature, I think. The best, and that is all of a sudden people kind of join together, look after each other, they're generous to each other, it brings communities together. And that's the best, and it's not been critical of people. But it also shows the worst, because as soon as law and order breaks down, what's the problem? Looting. And then the other problem is, why does it take so long to pay out insurance payments or government payments after a disaster? It's because of fraud. And so people have got their snouts in the troughs trying to steal money that's being handed out. Uh-huh. If you could trust everybody, you just say, everyone line up and you get your $1,000 cash as you walk past the turnstile.
So it shows both sides.
It shows both sides. It's kind of, if you like, it's human nature with the volume wound up. Okay. Ian asked, why did I say it's a problem for atheists? And then can you ask me the other one again? Okay. The problem for atheists, I suggest, is this. This doesn't prove it doesn't prove it's an untrue position, but I think it shows how hard it is to live it out. So Richard Dawkins says, the world has evolved and it's just blind, pitiless indifference. And then he spends time shouting at us about all the social evils that religion does because he cares so much. And that is, if it's just blind, pitiless indifference, none of this matters, none of these people matter, it's all just make-believe anyway, any value. Why is it that an atheist cares so much? And they do. I just think you can't live out that blind, pitiless indifference. Peter Singer, the atheist ethicist, he said when someone reaches the end of their useful life, basically in broad terms, and when someone reaches the end of their useful life, mentally, physically and so on, they should just be euthanized. And yet in an interview in New York, it was found out that he had spent a huge amount of money for special care for his mother who was in advanced Alzheimer's, as he should. But when it came to living it out and having his mum euthanized, he couldn't bring himself to do it. Fair enough. But my point is just that we are wired up somehow to not be able to live out the implications of blind, pitiless indifference.
Second question, why do you continue to believe?
Why do I continue to believe? Look, I want you to know, when I see that, you can't help but see this and your heart go out, And I can't help but look and think, this is not how I would have written the script. Because my mum is getting Alzheimer's at the moment, and I know why they call it the long goodbye now, because she is fading away. And it worries me now that she's going to start losing her dignity. And anyway, I choke up when I talk about it. And that is not how, she's a fine Christian woman, and that's not how I would have written the script. Why do I hold on? Because I believe that God has stepped into history in the person of Jesus, that I see Jesus do things and believe that he did the miracles, the signs that he did that give hope for the future, where there'll be no more mourning or crying or pain or tsunamis or Alzheimer's, and that he died on the cross to take the guilt that destroys our own lives and our world, to pay for that so that our world be remade one day and those who trust him can live there. That's why. And sometimes I have to grit my teeth and hang on to that, because so often the rest of life is not how I would have written.
Well, we can have the opportunity to hear more on this topic, and Al will be addressing us over the next 3 weeks. Al, before we just wrap up, do you want to just give a little bit of a foreshadowing, a taste of what we can expect?
Yep. What I'd like to do, I think I had the overall topics. Where is God when life seems fragile? Where is God and is he to blame? And where is God when we need hope? So what I'd like to do over the next 3 weeks is actually take some Bible passages and drill down and see what it is that they say about this kind of this big issue, and how does a proper understanding of God and what he's done fit with our world. That's what I want to do. And this is a highly emotive area for people. As it should be.
Okay. All the details on our website, of course, so please do refer to that. I wonder if you could give us some feedback from today. If you've been to previous panels, you know this was done differently to the way we did the first three panels, and obviously different to how we do our regular weekly talks. So we'd really appreciate if everyone could just spend a moment jotting this down, even if you've given us your contact details before. Clearly, if we don't have your contact details and you'd like to be kept informed of what happens here every Thursday, we'll need to receive that. So please give what information you're comfortable to pass on. Two things at the top there, just to draw your attention. First, for the ladies amongst us, City Woman. This is the brochure that perhaps everyone received, so the men can pass that on to the ladies, other ladies they know in the city. There's an event coming up in 1 week's time. It doesn't matter what other people think. Really? Why is the approval of others so important to us? So this is coming up very soon. It'll be a nice event on the top floor of one of the city buildings with a nice view over the harbour, nice food, etc. If you'd like to come, you can already indicate your expression of interest, ladies, on this feedback form. And finally, there's also a spot there where you can indicate interest in coming to the City Bible Forum after work meetings, which we hold just across the square in St Andrew's School from 6:30 to 8. Some of us meet for dinner from 6 to 6:30. Al Stewart will be there leading a course, and a number of us as well from the City Bible Forum team will be looking at different parts of the Bible. That's on Wednesdays. So please do finish filling that in. You can leave it at your tables or on your chairs or collect them at the end. Thanks for spending the time here with us. I hope it has provoked some thoughts on this topic. We look forward to seeing you next week.
The recording that you have just listened to is from the City Bible Forum. For more information about City Bible Forum events in your city, or to order other talks, please visit citybibleforum.org.